Mr. Darling, during tonight's reading, could you slip out and fetch 2 bog bodies for me, please? I want to include them in a seance I'm planning.
Could it be another time, madam? I so want to stay to hear the reading on beautiful bog bodies. It's so wonderful, so alluring.
No, just be quick about it, please. I'd like 2 of the most leathery ones brought in, without too much black slime getting on the carpets, please. Oh, and both with working mandibles, so I can understand them when they speak.
I'll just ring up the League of Lady Gravediggers. They probably don't get much bog work. What was it, 976? Which ditches was it?
Mr. Darling?
No, it's no bother. I'm already dialing. It's ringing.
Welcome to the Midnight Library, dear guests. I'm sorry Mr. Darling has disappeared down the hallway so quickly. He's come over all strangely just now. Well, stranger than usual. Please make your way into the reading room and find a comfy spot for yourself. Once you're seated, I'm just going to close the tall doors at the rear of the reading room just for tonight, as there seems to be a draft that's making its way through the library. Perhaps an absent-minded maid has left a window open somewhere. Anyway, I wouldn't want you to catch your death. I mean, what would we do with you? I am your hospitable host, Miranda Merrick. Speaking of hospitality, in honor of our sumptuous topic for tonight, our baker, Natasha, has created a wonderful bog pie based on a recipe from her homeland of Ireland, way back when her kind was still in Ireland. Anyway, please help yourself to a ladle of the pie. I humbly apologize that it's amusingly being served in a cup. It doesn't seem to stay on a plate very well. What's in it? I couldn't say. We'll have to see if Natasha wants to share the ancient recipe. No. I'm not having any. It might affect my voice and vision. And no jokes about the tea being made with bog water, please. I'm well aware of the double meaning. Some of you have the most wicked sense of humor. Besides, we all know that swamp water actually makes more interesting tea. Tonight's delectable topic, as some of you know, is that of bog bodies, which are wonderful. But let me state here that bogs themselves are fascinating things, positively resplendent with luscious, mysterious lore. In my family, way, way back, of course, we supposedly had a lady named Ginny, who was rumored to be, you won't believe this, a bog witch who lived in County Cork in Ireland. She kept to herself on a wild spit of arable land along the bog, only traveling the short distance into town to pick up various sundry items and books. Her only company was said to be that of crows and wolves. Well, the story goes that the meddling locals were apparently always gossiping about her, trying to spy on her, and were convinced that she was the reason the bog and swampy areas around it were growing, and the town was shrinking. Isn't that the most preposterous thing you've ever heard? How could one innocent, lonely woman bewitch the lay of the natural land? The townspeople were obviously so obsessed with my poor but compelling relative that they neglected their own properties, which were all later engulfed and overtaken by the growing bog, and alas, the tiny town was no more. It was swallowed up and taken off the map entirely. So I guess the lesson we and anyone from the village council can learn is that, to mind your own business, I believe. Now, be assured we are going to slip into the slime with the bodies soon, but I imagine we should do a little dive into the magical properties of the bogs that produce them first. These crucial wetlands are some of the oldest and beneficial components of many landscapes throughout history, providing both beauty and, as you'll see, practicality, and the true value of which has only become understood in more recent times. So first, let's have a small clarification to whet our fertile imaginations for such things. Let me briefly differentiate four types of wetlands that may be confused with one another, being bogs, swamps, marshes, and fens that are all similar but form and behave differently. Just like humans and magical beings. Swamps are lovely low-lying wetlands that will support the life of some plants and trees within it. They receive their water from streams and rivers, and the water within the swamp has an ebb and flow to it. You can sometimes paddle around in a swamp, which is not always advised. Bogs are generally higher in elevation to that of the lands that surround them, and they support only a little life in small plants that cover them, and they receive their water from precipitation, which they absorb and hold. Bogs are a bit more like a dense mud pit. They generate peat, which is a substance we'll also need to briefly dissect. Our petite bog here on the grounds of the Midnight Library is easily overlooked, so be careful as you make your way across our acreage. It's on the eastern side of the property. No, western side. Southern? Sorry, I'm a little directionally challenged. Marshes are rich, somewhat shallow, fertile wetlands that support a variety of plants, grasses, and reeds, and are slightly more swamp-like, but you couldn't paddle around in them. While fens are more like bogs, but have less of the curious peat substance, and they will support more kinds of life than a bog. In short, bogs are the worst, and also the best in many ways. Bogs, while appearing to be more harmless to the eye, are often more dangerous, mysterious, and riddled with death, superstition, and lore. So they're charming for certain. But as you'll hear, they have a unique way of enriching human history like no other earthly providence. Raised bogs, which are often several feet or meters higher than their surrounding area, can usually be found in northern European countries, but there are even some in North America. They slowly formed thousands of years ago when the glaciers receded, leaving behind small lakes and damp, deep hollows in the landscapes. Over time, these isolated bodies of sludgy water became thickened with rotting vegetation and silt. The vegetation never fully decomposed, and slowly peat began to form and fill the hollows. Some bogs may be as much as perhaps 5 meters or 16 feet deep, but the building up of the peat causes a mounding effect as it grows over time. There is often a mossy skin of low-growing plants that form covering the top of the gooey peat, giving the unknowing the idea that they can simply walk over the surface of the pretty terrain. It's like a funny joke being told by Mother Nature, because there are often loose pockets of peat and large gaps and deep holes filled with black water just beneath that dappled carpet of spongy fairyland-like moss. And guess what happens when you charge out across it, or are pushed into it? Sadly, death by bog is not a given, as there are shallow bogs that you only risk breaking a leg in or becoming lodged in until someone who likes you enough to pull you out comes along. But rest assured, man-eating bogs did and do present a real opportunistic place for you to lose your life. Isn't that wonderful? You just have to know how deep the bog you're thinking about walking on is, which, based on face value alone, is almost impossible to know. The aforementioned peat generated by the bogs is a highly compacted substance formed of dead and decaying vegetation. It's the perfect example of the earth recycling its components in the most fundamental way. Peat is a densely packed fibrous substance that is rich with carbon, which makes it perfect for burning. There's evidence of humans using peat as fuel as early as the 7th century, and on into current times it is still being used. But back when a demand for an alternative to coal began to grow and more peat was being harvested in the 18th century, well, that's when things got interesting, because that's when the bodies turned up. And we'll get to them in a moment. Now, we can fairly say for certain that for as long as people have been rooting around in bogs, they've been discovering the items that other people have placed there, either volitionally or unintentionally. And the array of items is vast and varied according to which country, the time period, and the beliefs of the people making use of this landscape peculiarity. I believe it can also safely be assumed that many of the things found early on were kept, sold, or even repurposed by those who found them, because bogs, as I'm sure you've gathered, possess a magical ability, the ability to preserve and save things. They save everything from weapons to wagons to people, and these people hold clues to the past, and they have things to tell us about their lives and deaths. It's believed by modern scholars and archaeologists and scientists that bogs were once many things to many people. They were thought to be thin places, where the boundary between the seen and the unseen touch. This is because the will-o'-the-wisp, the ignis fatuus, or foolish fire, was often seen glowing, twinkling, and hovering over the unusual ground. It's not unlikely that some of the bodies found in the bogs were those who were lured there by this compelling feature. They followed the mysterious floating light, hoping to make contact with fairies or spirits from other realms, only to meet their doom by falling into and sinking beneath the black sludge of the bog. Bogs, you see, have the charming habit of releasing gases. They emit phosphorescent light. They can also burp, belch, and even erupt or explode, spewing mud, muck, and perhaps even the odd item from within themselves. So, not unlike a drunk uncle, then. It may be weird to envision, but early peoples interacted with bogs for many reasons. They were a place of great resources. In addition to the useful peat, they provided reeds, heather, and rushes for weaving to make textiles and baskets. The heavy moss was used as insulation. And iron ore mined from a bog could be fashioned into weapons and home goods. Another remarkable use for the sphagnum moss that grows upon the bog's surface is that it can be used as an antiseptic. Moss has been known for centuries for its healing properties when used in wound dressings. So now you see why so many people were risking their lives traversing and digging in these dangerous land features. In fact, they were so determined to collect the assets they needed that they often built, or attempted to build, stone pathways and planked walkways over and through the bogs to get to the goods they needed. Or maybe to get rid of what they didn't need. Oh, and food, or more specifically, animal proteins, could even be sourced from the bogs, as the more watery fens held fish. And the muckier bogs were filled with wild birds, both nesting and hunting for crispy insects and gooey amphibians. Who knew bogs could fulfill so many of historical people's needs? And what do you need? Why, a trip to tonight's sponsor, Grimm's Grocers, of course. If you live like an angel and only want what's nice, Grimm's has all that BS and at a low price. But if you are wicked, mystical, and dark, Grimm's has you covered with a new place to park. Just drive round the back and stop at the sculpture of the velvety black, enormous vulture. Wait a bit by the statue until it's safe to come in. Grimm's will come take you to the darkness within. The storage room is crammed from the floor to the ceiling. From the unholy to the damned, Grimm's knows what's appealing. Eyes of toads, bottled demon's breath, spells that explode with the stench of death. Hexed kittens that grow into familiar black cats. Pretty mittens with pentagrams sewn on their backs. Get the skull of a vampire to hang on your wall. Get the power you desire to reign over all. Get spooky, get vengeful, and then even the score. They have everything you need at Grimm's Grocery Store. On special this week at Grimm's, Carrie Ann's corpse wax candles, made from the fat of the evil dead. Light them up and see into the abyss. Solve mysteries of the past and witness the horrors of the future. No stock market information will be provided by the Abyss. Grimm's cannot be held responsible for anything the Abyss shows you that causes anxiety, nightmares, hallucinations, incontinence, or incessant screaming. Carrie Ann's corpse wax candles available in two distinctive scents, summer linen and clotted casket juice, only at Grimm's Grocers on the corner of Vincent and Price. Tonight, we're going to do something almost forbidden. No, not that. Not until we hire more staff. We're going to tell you about some friends of ours. Don't laugh, we have friends. We know you're sad when the library is closed, but we have an alternative to be proposed. Our friends at the Grave Talks would love to see you. They have what you seek, we guarantee you. Thrice weekly, they invite haunted guests sublime. They confess both demonic and spirits divine. Hear tales of houses overflowing with ghosts. Meet Tony Bruschi, your fearless fine host. Visit unseen realms of the beings deceased, apparitions, phantoms, and vengeful beasts. Unfiltered, undaunted, and unorthodox. Friends, listen closely and hear the Grave Talks. From Amityville to The Conjuring and all of haunted history. Even dive in deep and procuring the Perrin family mystery. Hunt spirits with the explorers who knew Ed and Lorraine. Relive all the horrors that drove some insane. Unfiltered, undaunted, and unorthodox. Friends, listen closely and hear the Grave Talks. Find the Grave Talks wherever great shows can be found. And find Brave Tony Bruschi in any local cemetery. When you get there, tell him Miranda sent you. Now, in the interest of clarity, I want to note that there is record of the very first bog body being discovered in a German peat bog in the year 1640. But the majority of the discoveries began a few decades later in the 1700s in northwestern Europe. This came about as people began the regular harvesting of the peat, with troops of men digging and cutting wagon loads of the peculiar burnable substance. Some of the earliest bodies were encountered in the blackness of the bog. Strangely preserved, whole humans were pulled from the smothering pitch, some still wearing the clothing they died in. So finely preserved were some of the bodies that their hair, fingernails, and even stomach contents were in perfect condition. In fact, so impressively preserved are some of the bodies that they can be seen in modern museums. I'm tempted to refer to them as survivors. Maybe not. The truth is, they are mummies, mummified by the anaerobic properties of the bog and the merciless passage of time. These bodies, compressed by the weight of the bog and a little dehydration, were often whole, but also found by the peat. They were also discolored, showing a deep brown coloring of their skin that had a tough, leathery texture. Sadly, most of the early bodies that were pulled from the bogs did not survive into modern times. It is fascinating to note that because these bodies did not decompose, they were believed by some to be holy or saintly, due to the belief that sanctified bodies do not rot. But during the preceding centuries, there was not only no understanding of the process that created the bodies, there was also no understanding of how to preserve the bodies. When exposed to the air, the bog bodies immediately began to rapidly decompose, so some were burned, some were skeletonized, and even reburied. The belief here was that the souls of the muck mummies needed saving by way of a Christian burial in consecrated grounds. In modern times, when carbon dated, some of the bodies proved to be thousands of years old. Some of these people lived during the Iron Age, roughly between 550 and 175 years BC. It's difficult to know how many bodies have been found in the past for sure, perhaps thousands. But what is known is that there are records accounting for the 500 bodies found in Denmark alone. And when you figure in all of the bodies found in the UK, the Netherlands, and Germany, well, we're once again talking numbers in the thousands. So, how did so many people from long ago end up submerged in the strange landscapes? Well, the exact truth of this matter eludes us, I'm afraid, but the theories are surprising. Because of the array of items discovered in addition to the bodies, it's postulated that the bogs weren't just a place to gather all of the resources I listed earlier, a place to take things from. They were also a place to put things in, on purpose. Depending upon which country and era, the bogs seemed as though they were a place to make offerings, perhaps supernatural portals to communicate with deities or spirits. Because livestock animals have been found, some tethered to posts. Weapons such as swords, shields, tools, musical instruments, and although I hesitate to mention it, perfectly good cauldrons have been found, as well as what appears to be food offerings. I use the word offerings because all of these items were valuable, usable belongings. They weren't damaged or old or ruined. This implies sacrifice, a willingness to part with precious or meaningful things in hopes of gaining favor or relief from suffering. You may have heard of the finding of bog butter, which is precisely what was found. Large amounts of human-crafted dairy butter, still bright yellow and technically edible, although not advised, has been scooped out from the depths of the blackened sludge. Of course, the butter could have been stored in the bogs to preserve it or hide it from raiders, but it's the fact that so many large clumps of the butter have been found and how they've been presented in beautiful crockery and custom-made wooden boxes that makes archaeologists and anthropologists think that these are food offerings placed in the bogs on purpose. But what about all those bodies? Yes. Well, I'm sure you could guess by now that many of the bodies were unfortunate or careless folks who just fell into the bogs and sunk into the abyss of the suffocating slime. Sadly, it's also believed to be possible that people who were downtrodden or heartbroken or dejected for some reason may have willingly plummeted into the bogs to end their own lives. There's still another option or two left. There's good old-fashioned murder, gruesome murder, and a favorite of ours here in the library that we briefly touched on earlier, ritualistic sacrifice. Let's meet some of these fine folks, shall we? This first fellow is such a compelling find. In Denmark in 1950, two brothers discovered the body of a man about 8 feet down in a peat bog. The man was so fresh-looking in his appearance, resembling a sleeping person, the brothers kindly mistook him for a recent murder victim. He was wearing a sheepskin cap, a leather belt, and a new-looking noose tied around his neck. He was named Tolland Man, and when his remains were carbon dated, he was discovered to be from the Iron Age and well over 2,000 years old. And although he was most obviously hanged, which implies punishment for some civil infraction, others believe he may have been part of a human sacrificial ceremony, because he was also treated with apparent care or even respect after his death. Most notably, the cap was left on his head, his mouth and eyes were purposefully closed, and he was placed on his side in a restful position. So Tolland Man is still a mystery man after all this time. Because of his excellent preservation, what we can know today is that he was approximately 40 years old, that he was relatively healthy, and for his last meal he partook of a vegetarian meal featuring mostly grains, 12 to 14 hours prior to his death. My dear guests, I cannot recommend highly enough that you take a few moments to gaze upon him with your own living eyes, as there are spectacularly detailed photos of him, as well as the actual displaying of the man himself. Well, just his head now affixed to a replicated body in the Silkeborg Museum in Denmark. Upon Tolland Man's peaceful face can be seen beard stubble, every wrinkle and pore, and even his eyelashes are visible. Unbelievably, his fingerprints were able to be taken, making his one of the oldest sets of prints on record. We think he's beautiful. Not as beautiful, some may say, is Lindau Man, who was discovered in Cheshire, England, by workers cutting peat in 1984. Lindau Man might be described as not quite as presentable as Tolland Man, but that hasn't stopped the British Museum from preserving him by freeze-drying and placing him in a large glass display case. He resembles an extremely deflated amber-yellow human balloon type thing, what there is of him. Basically his head, torso, and arms. It is said he was sliced clean in two by the peat cutting machine that helped reveal him. The discovery of him in the 80s caused a flurry of media attention, prompting the study of him to be accelerated, and the scientific studies completed on him reported that Lindau Man was thought to be of a rather high status due to the condition of his body and fingernails. However, he was most certainly killed in a quite brutal, possibly ritualistic manner. He was struck with great force upon his head with a heavy weapon, perhaps an axe, stabbed directly in the jugular vein, and then garroted with a cord. After he mercifully died, his throat was cut, and he was pushed or positioned face down into the bog. Incredibly, killings like this of high-quality people are postulated to be honorable or sacrificial offerings to a god or gods, by way of sending these deities the best the community had to offer. So if you were all healthy, of lofty birth, or a respected member of your tribe, clan, or society, sometimes they took you out for a stroll on the bog and arranged for a meeting for you and the gods or spirits in charge of everything. Lucky you. Lindau Man was believed to be approximately 25 years of age and is also 2,000 years old. His clever nickname given to him by the locals is Pete Marsh. And last but certainly not least is the bog body of a lady known as Haldermost Woman. Found by Niels Hansen, a schoolteacher, in the year 1879 in Jutland, Denmark. This particular muck mummy, who has been out of her bog for more than 130 years now, but is believed to have been in the bog since around the time between BC became AD, give or take a few hundred years either way. Haldermost Woman has the rarefied distinction of being the best dressed bog body ever to be found thus far. The woman, believed to be about 40, was petite, perhaps less than 5 feet tall, and was found to be smartly dressed in a finely woven plaid skirt and scarf made of high-quality wool. Protectively draped over her slim shoulders were two handcrafted sheepskin capes. Decomposed plant fibers closest to her skin are thought to have made up linen-like undergarments. The Haldermost Woman had about her person several curious items. The scarf found around her neck was tucked under her left arm and held there with a pin fashioned from a bird bone. Several patches had been sewn into her lambskin capes. One of the patches was made to cover up a group of items, a small comb made of bone, a leather cord, and a blue hairband. All of these items were wrapped up in an animal bladder. She also had long hair secured with a woolen cord upon which were two tiny amber beads. And although a few thousand years in the bog discolored her fine garments, making them appear dreary brown, analysis has proven their original colors to be bright reds and blues. So yes, indeed, her reconstructed clothing, which has been on display in several museums, is still a fascinating peek into the distant past, making it easy to see how some of our late ancestors were dressed. Haldermost Woman herself is a little rough. While you can absolutely tell that you're looking at a long-deceased person, the words female or lady don't exactly jump to mind. She lies predominantly on her back, with her left leg resting over her right, as though she's about to roll onto her side. Her shriveled right arm and hand are detached but lying beside her. Her narrow shoulders are drawn up to her non-existent cheeks. And her face, well, poor thing. Anyway, when we're all dead, well, when you're all dead, in 2300 years, I doubt you'll look much better. So, like I said, have a look at Tolland Man instead. Tonight's reading at the Midnight Library is actually brought to you by Monster Flesh and Mane, as we've entered into kind of a pact with them. We stand accused and do confess we've cast a spell upon the best. They've come to us with scent in hand. They've custom mixed a unique brand. The folks at Monster Flesh and Mane have brewed up something so arcane. It's made with Darling firmly in mind, so you can become one of his kind. Meadow foam, rosewood, leather, and spice, like a stroll in a woodland doth entice. The anointing oil for the handsome brute, the irresistible allure of forbidden fruit. Darling's got his own scent in the sinister stash, magnetic, mysterious, with primal panache. Monsters made a collection so brimming with charm, scented oil, shampoo, and rich balm to disarm. Support the library and the monsters who made the collection. Get 15% off and improve your reflection. Visit themonsterlair.com and step into the limelight. To get your sinister stash, use the code word MIDNIGHT. The rumors are true. The Midnight Library is ecstatic that the fine folks at Monster Flesh and Mane have created a men's grooming kit in honor of our own handsome Mr. Darling. Not that there was anything wrong with him in the first place, but now his animal magnetism is completely irresistible. Visit our friends at themonsterlair.com and release your own inner beast. To get 15% off your overflowing box of full-size products, plus lots of useful and fun extras, use the code word MIDNIGHT.
There is one more fact I should like to share with you about the Haldermost Woman, though. One of the lead researchers, a Ms. Frey, who extensively studied the Haldermost Woman, was quoted saying that initially they assumed the Bog Woman to be a witch. But upon verifying how most excellently made her clothing and accessories were, they then believed her to be a very fine lady. As if the two personas could not coexist to ascribe one being, and one exquisite being at that. Well, we'll just see about Ms. Frey, because I'm... Sorry, my lovelies. Oh, look at that tiny hand popping up. Irma, have you got a note for me? Oh, excellent. It's from Natasha regarding the bog pie recipe. It reads, "Dear Madam, please tell your lovely guests that there's no way in seven hells I'd share my bog recipe, and they can all go pound salt. Love and kisses, Natasha from the Lower Kitchen." Well, there we have it. It's getting to be past the point at which it's less safe for you to be here, so off you go. Oh, let me get the doors for you. Here we go. They weren't locked this time. There's Mr. Darling wearing a toothy grin as he sees you out. And we'll reopen the library just a little while from now and invite several of you to return. Good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Your guests looked pleased, madam. A bit bewildered, but pleased. And good news! The League of Lady Gravediggers have delivered two fine bog bodies with working mandibles to your seance parlor. Big Lou informed me. So, good night!
What on earth is the matter with you? You love a good seance. I'm going to bewitch the bog people and then ask them about both of our distant ancestors. And then the four of us are going to have some of that dreadful bog pie.
And no, thank you. I'm having a bath.
You hate baths.
I think I've got ticks.
You love ticks.
Oh, all right then. I do not like bog bodies. Live bodies, dead bodies, ripped apart bodies. They're all wonderful. But bog bodies, no sorry. That's the limit. They're disgusting, revolting, creepy, and all around ookie.
All right. Good night, Mr. Darling. The Midnight Library is proudly brought to you by everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris and Jason at Sounds Like an Earful. Be sure to check out our friend's most ghostly podcast, The Grave Talks with Tony Bruschi. Tell him Miranda sent you. Cast a spell of your very own by supporting our partner in crime, Monster Flesh and Mane. To get 15% off of your purchase, use the code MIDNIGHT. And I would love to hear from you personally. Yes, you. To get ghoulish Midnight Library goodies, have your questions answered by me, and hear strange extra content, please join our amazing Patreon at patreon.com/midnightlibrary.